There we go. That's facing the right way. All right, Dr. Rosenhaus.
This is gonna be weird if I have to like look at myself.
You don't. You look at then. I don't know. You can look at me. You can look at yourself.
Nah, you like. You kind of look like you kind of just my head at the moment.
Would you like me to get the rest of you?
Oh, wow.
Is that enough?
Very
should I get
very,
more?
Good background. Yeah. Background.
No, it's perfect.
It's a professional operation.
Yes, of course. I got a whole phone for it.
Yeah. Okay. So, John has asked me to talk about bookstores that have been influenced, you know, that have influenced me. And I am happy to oblige because bookstores have been a big part of my life. And I don't care if they're going obsolete. I still like them. And so I'll mention, let's try for three bookstores that had kind of made an impression on me. So I would say kind of my, you know, some early memories that I have, actually, when I was quite young and I was first, you know, kind of, you know, getting in, you know, I was first getting my feet wet as a reader, right?
Okay.
You know, I think you kind of know at some point that you're a reader, right? You're one of these people who always has a book with you, right? When you finish one book, you immediately pick up another book. That's almost a subculture of people who are just readers like that. For example, in my family, my father is a reader, has an extensive collection of old paperbacks that he treats very reverentially. My mother is not a reader.
Okay.
She can read, don't get me wrong, as she will read when she has to, but she doesn't read for pleasure. She doesn't constantly have a novel with her or a nonfiction book. She prefers things like political magazines and things like that, but she's not, you know, not a reader in that sense. I am. And I probably discovered this when I was about 9. And there was a bookstore in our town called Titles 2, right? Titles Roman numeral 2.
Okay.
And it was, you know, and it was a very small bookstore, right? But of course, at that time, right now, this is now, so this would have been early 1980s when we were doing this. So of course, you know, home computers were still in the future, much less the internet and you know, online ordering and, you know, things like that, or e-books. You know, for heaven's sake, no one could even conceive of such a thing. So basically, the only way you bought books was to actually go to a bookstore, and the only way you knew what books was available was to go to a bookstore. You know, now it's not like, you know, you go to Amazon and, you know, you click on a book and then it says, here are 10 other books that, you know, that if you like this book, you'll probably like these other books as well. Which is, by the way, scarily effective, because every time they show me 10 other books, I'm like, yeah, you know, impulse buy, you know, and click, because I've got the one click, you know, ordering step. But anyway, so it was kind of a big deal. You didn't know what books were available until you actually went there. And if the bookstore didn't have it, they would order it for you. Right, that was a major service that bookstores provided. Right, they would go get the book for you. Again, now of course that's all just completely obsolete because anyone can just go to Amazon and order for themselves. You don't need the middleman to order the book for you, for heaven's sake. But it used to be you would ask them to order the book, and a week later they'd call you up and say, "Well, your book is in. Come get it." There you go. Life was good. Okay, and you know, probably, I mean, I got this from my father just because my father constantly had a book in his hands, and even at a young age, I liked mysteries. My father was always reading Agatha Christie and Ellery Queen. I don't know if you know these names, but they're very famous mystery writers.
I've only ever read math textbooks. So okay, I'm very dead.
Well, you got to expand your
horizons. Yeah, I know. Yeah. I do.
Yeah, they weren't just famous mystery writers. They're famous mystery writers from like 1920s and 1930s. What the heck? I'll mention a few other names: Ellery Queen, John Dixon Carr. But they were from what's known as the Golden Age of mysteries, right? Because they were before, so, you know, in the 1940s, sort of the hard-boiled school took over. This was people like Sam Spade and Philip Marlowe. These are like tough, grizzled, private eyes kind of stories.
Okay.
Where the emphasis was on a lot of action and just basically having like a heroic tough guy, you know, the heart of it. That was not the kind of story that Agatha Christie and, you know, Ellery Queen and people like that were writing. They were writing basically logic puzzles in the form of mystery novels,
mm-hmm.
right? And the idea was, you know, you'd get to the end and some eccentric detective would come and using only information that the reader had just as much as the detective had would show you who had to be the, you know, the guilty person with varying degrees of plausibility, you know, depending on the story. Theoretically, you had all the information the detective had.
You talked about this when you were Phytosa and Anka Constantine were giving some kind of like interview thing. I was there and you were talking about this, right?
I probably was, as I think usually do.
Or maybe this was... I know I've heard you talk about this somewhere.
Yeah.
This is what actually got you into math, right?
In a sense, yeah. I mean, it certainly didn't hurt. It's because it's the same. You know, people who like math would tend to like these kinds of novels.
Yeah.
And frankly, tend not to like the more hard-boiled you know, school. But yeah, it's a very similar appeal. And that, as I said, it's basically a logic puzzle in the mm-hmm. form of a novel. So as literature, these books tend to leave something to be desired. You don't read them for the great dialogue and the stunning insights into human nature. But just you get to that explanation scene at the end where the detective pieces it all together, and it's all very ingenious, or at least in the best representatives, it's all very ingenious. Clearly, I have to lend you several from my personal library to bring you up to speed on this. But okay, this was the main bookstore we'd go to, Titles Two, and we'd go there and. I, even at age 9, I loved browsing. I just thought books were just beautiful. And just seeing just shelf after shelf after shelf of books was just so appealing. And, and especially like these mysteries I'm talking about, they would tend to have very colorful covers and, very attractive. And I just like looking at them. And at the time, I was really too young to read. There were no pictures, it was just too complicated for a 9-year-old. But I liked trying,
Okay.
But one thing I did like is that even at that young age, I would discover the math books and the puzzle books. I was already playing chess at that age. And I can remember, I'm thinking of one day in particular where I was sort of let loose and I went to the puzzle section, the games and puzzles section. Mm-hmm. So that's where the chess books were. And, but also books of like logic puzzles. And, that's where I discovered Raymond Smullyan. He is the famous legend. You probably know Raymond Smullyan. Sure, you know Raymond Smullyan.
I remember. I think you've talked about him, but that's about the.
Well, clearly.
I know you've talked about him.
I have to say, my edited book in honor of Raymond Smullyan. This was a great thrill for me, right? No one else apparently, but it was a great thrill for me to edit that book.
Okay.
So anyway, he's famous for doing logic puzzles. Yeah. You can keep that actually. I got a box of them at home.
Really?
Oh yeah, sure.
Ooh.
Yeah, so I'll give you a little taste of Raymond Smullyan.
Awesome.
So anyway, it was kind of, in particular, he wrote a book called, the book was called What is the Name of This Book?
Right? Yes, I've heard about this in a lot of places, actually.
Yeah, well, he's a famous guy, right? Okay. And I just remember, it had a really striking yellow cover that really stood out. And I thought, what an intriguing thing. Although at 9, I don't think I used the word intriguing. And I just remember sitting like cross-legged on the floor with this book and just sat there reading the book until my mother came and got me. And I was like, you gotta buy me this book. And they were like, well, okay, there were less wholesome things I could be obsessed with, right? So they bought me this book. But anyway, that's, so just from a young age, I have these very fond memories of just going to the bookstore and browsing. I think I got that from, especially my father, who was always just an inveterate reader and always had books with him. So books, I always found books appealing, not just literally reading them, but just books themselves, right? Were just physically beautiful, and I still think they are. Good books, not every book, but I think there's something physically attractive. Okay, well, more recently, nowadays, of course, bookstores are in danger of going obsolete, right? And that experience of just discovering, it used to be fun. You go to the bookstore and you just don't know what you're going to find, right? And you just browse and hey, your favorite author has a new book out. I was big into Stephen King, when I was little. I'm still into Stephen King, not quite as big as I was, but. It would be a big deal when a new Stephen King book came out. I remember thinking, I was at an age where, it was still a challenge to read like an adult novel. But for Stephen King, I would make the effort. Mm-hmm. But again, you didn't have big television campaigns or big, or just go to websites. But, as I said, now the way you find out what new books are, you just go to Amazon, right? Mm-hmm. Or some other website. And they have a complete, they track your buying history and they show you all the books you're likely to care about. And they're very good at it, right? So now I might walk into a Barnes & Noble today, but... why would I do that, right? I don't need to go there to find out, what books are available. Mm-hmm. I don't need to go there to actually buy the book, right? There isn't even any advantage to having the physical book in your hand, right? Because you go to Amazon, you get, free preview, you get the table of contents, so you don't even, it used to be maybe you knew the book was coming out, but you didn't know anything about it until you actually held the book, mm-hmm. and read the jacket flaps, things like that. So new bookstores are kind of obsolete. You do still get this experience in used bookstores, right? And that's what I really love. When you walk in used bookstores, I mean, Charlottesville, for example, is like used bookstore heaven. Okay, there are just a bunch of really, like Blue Whale Books is one of them. And there's an even better one. I can't remember exactly where it is, but I can't remember the name of it. Just these books where you just walk in and it smells musty. Like, it just smells like old
book.
Oh,
wait, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. It's got that, I think that's just a wonderful smell. Yeah.
Oh, I was in California. I can't remember the name of this bookstore. It's this huge bookstore. It had, like, three floors, and one of the floors was just a maze. And in the maze, there were just books.
Oh, yeah. There's a place in Washington, D.C., actually. Capitol Hill Books, or Capitol City Books, I think it is. It's near the Capitol. And it's just like that. It's just books everywhere, kind of loosely organized. They have a bathroom. There are books stacked up in the bathroom. Okay. So you have plenty of bathroom reading. And, you know, but that's what I really like, because then you get that experience where you just don't know what you're going to find. Mm-hmm. And these are books that are long out of print, you know, often. And books that where there isn't a free Kindle version available. And plus just old books. I mean, they don't make books like that anymore, printed on really good quality paper with really good engraving. You know, a book used to be a work of art. Of course, it also used to be that a book was something only rich people could own, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so it's not all good news. But you still get that. So there's just to narrow it down to one bookstore in particular. Mm-hmm. There's a bookstore that I really like in New York City. It's called the Mysterious Bookshop. It's still around. It's been around. It's been around for like 30 years at least. It's in Tribeca, I believe it is.
Okay.
Yeah, New York has all these little regions in Tribeca. And I forgot what Tribeca stands for. It actually stands for something, Tribeca.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It means something, but I...
Not like an acronym.
It's not an acronym, but it's okay. Like the... I can't remember. I mean, you can Google it.
I'm sure I will end up Googling it.
It's an abbreviation for something, Tribeca. But anyway, it's called The Mysterious Bookshop. It was founded by a guy named Otto Penzler, who's still alive. And he's a famous... I don't think he was famous as a writer, but he was always famous as an editor. And to this day, he keeps turning out, edited anthologies of books. Mm-hmm. But you go to this bookstore in New York, it's called The Mysterious Bookshop, and it's specifically a bookstore for mysteries. And it's a mix of new and used, but mostly used. And you walk in, and it's not a huge space, but you're just surrounded by books. It's floor to ceiling books, right? Literally, like shelves you have to get down on your knees, to look at, to ones where they actually have ladders, like in these old style libraries.
Oh, that must be so cool.
And you can actually slide the ladder.
That's
around.
Awesome.
Yeah, they're not actually like firemen's ladders because people would kill themselves. The bookstore would get sued.
Okay.
But they're like, so the ladders are like physically attached to the walls, but you can slide them in these little tracks. And you get quite a workout. If you want to browse through, do the whole bookstore, you're constantly climbing up and down, these stairs. And I've had times when I spend an hour there, I'm just exhausted at the end of it, climbing up and down. Mm-hmm. But you discover a lot of these old mystery writers whose books are long out of print. And, like people like the ones I met, like Agatha Christie and Ellery Queen, Giant Garden, very famous names, but also like people like Freeman Wills Crofts was a famous guy in the 1920s, someone I discovered recently. It's like, wow, good writer. And it's just really fun because you have no idea what you're going to find. And you just find these very attractive, volumes that are just physically attractive with, people who write stories that, where people don't write stories like that anymore. Mysteries nowadays are just, the genre has gone off in a different direction. And that's what I really love, just finding some old treasure, and then getting it home and getting into your comfy chair, with the perfect lighting and the and just get lost in a good story. And that's something that Amazon just hasn't done yet. Amazon is great if you're looking for new books, and Amazon is great if there's a specific book you have in mind that you want. Very often they'll put you in touch with used bookstores and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But they're not good for just browsing. No, they're not good for just, hey, maybe I'll discover something new.
Do you think they could ever do that?
Not to the same degree, okay. Because again, it's just there's a physical aspect to it.
Yep.
Not just sitting at your desk at a computer, but actually rummaging with your bare hands. And of course, I keep mentioning mysteries, but obviously it's not just mysteries. Math books and science books are the same way. I have a number of just old math and science books on my shelf that are just, you feel like it's a little piece of history. Like, wow, this is...
Now you're making me want to go to bookstores.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you can find... I mentioned this Blue Whale Books, actually. They actually have a decent math and science section.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's in that downtown mall in the Charlesbury. Do you know that pedestrian mall?
No, I don't. I can't.
How long have you been in Harrisburg? Right, but
I don't venture out much.
Yeah. No, I didn't either when I was in college. But yeah, there's this big downtown pedestrian mall.
Okay.
And it's quite attractive. But anyway, there are a bunch of bookstores. In that mall, one of them is Blue Whale Books. But yeah, if you can find them, they're increasingly hard to find. There used to be a great one in Washington, D.C. DeWriters or something like that. It was a weird name. But it was specifically a math and science bookstore. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Right?
So it went out.
Life is good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
So it went out of business then, right?
Yeah. They do still exist, but in a much more limited form.
Okay.
It's kind of a wonder they existed as long as they did, because they were in downtown Washington and they had a huge space. And I can only imagine what the rent on that space was, because that was valuable space that they had. And, I love stores like that, but there's just no way they were selling enough books to maintain something like that. So they get increasingly hard to find. But like this other place I mentioned, the place that I can't remember the name, I could look it up easily. They have pretty good math and science section, but there too. You know, I love math, obviously. But also, you know, like evolutionary biology I got interested in. So, yeah, you're browsing these bookstores and suddenly you find like an original edition of The Origin of Species, you know, for some reasonable price that you can actually afford. Yeah, it's a good one.
That's really cool.
Yeah. Richmond, actually, is also big for antiquarian books. Although it tends to be, I like to play chess, so sometimes I buy these old chess books. But they tend to be very expensive.
Chess books?
Well, because they're rare, right? Okay. Yeah, not just chess books in general, but you know, just like the old books. Yeah, like if you go to any of the antiquarian bookstores, yeah, or the Library of Virginia. I think they do this every year, although I haven't been to it in a while. They have just the antiquarian book fair, where all these antiquarian book dealers just have their wares. And the point is, it's not just, you know, these are not books that you buy simply because you want a copy of the book. Like, if you want to read The Origin of Species, heck, it's free online. You don't buy...
But owning it
yeah.
is something a lot better.
It's the fact that, you know, it's just the history that's attached
yeah,
to it.
Yeah, I can relate somewhat. I have so my grandmother has a huge library in her house.
Mm-hmm.
It's like one of her rooms is just a library the whole entire thing. It's pretty great. Yeah. And I was looking through the books and I found... This was before I came to JMU. This is the summer before I came. And I found Plato's Dialogues. I found Lysis Symposium and one other. And then I found The Republic. Mm-hmm. And I read those that summer. And I think that was the first book that I actually read on my own. Wow. That wasn't like, yeah, no, I know. I know.
And that's pretty heavy stuff.
Yeah, and then the other book. That I've like read that I wasn't assigned to read.
Oh, I see.
And then after that, the only other books I've read, I think, are math textbooks. But anyways.
Yeah. Well, yeah. As I said, I mean, I grew up with this because I mean, my father was a chemical engineer. I mean, he was mm-hmm. a science. He worked in industry, but he very much had an academics mindset. But yeah, as I said, he was always an inveterate reader, so it was just part of the culture. But you know, I find out, like I take after my father, but my brother takes after my mother, right? Just you know. It's not that they specifically don't like reading. It's just not a thing,
mm-hmm.
To them. But yeah, but as I say, like Raymond Smullyan, who I mentioned before, I actually spent a weekend at his house when I was working on that book, and he was a reader because you could tell just books everywhere, and he would show you like his especially prized books. Oh, here's a very rare book that I have. Oh, this was one that had an influence on me. And you know, there's a culture attached mm-hmm. to books. And we say the bookstores are getting obsolete, and that is true. But it's not books that are obsolete. Right. It's, you know, and people are still reading. In fact, people are reading more than ever now. And it's more the form, it's sort of the form in which books get read and the way that you acquire them. So kind of book culture, you know, is getting lost. Like a modern hardcover book is just not as attractive as what mm-hmm. hardcover books used to look like. But okay. But anyways, let's see. Let's go for number three. So actually, the third bookstore I would single out as being very influential. I mean, we'll stick with a more reasonable. So the first I mentioned Titles too, which really was not an especially good bookstore. I mean, you know, any Barnes & Noble, you know, it's just a book palace, you know, compared mm-hmm. to Titles too. It was a very small bookstore. But again, it had some significance to me as a child. And then the Mysterious Bookshop was just a place I've often spent a lot of time in New York. So it was a fun place to browse. Right now, though, I would mention one bookstore that I really like. It's actually in Princeton, New Jersey. And it actually is primarily a new bookstore, although they do have a used section. It's called Labyrinth Books, and it's specifically a scholarly bookstore. Okay, so it's mostly nonfiction or highbrow fiction, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of literary fiction.
Okay,
but I go in there for the scholarly books. Like you walk in, and the main table has science books and math books and philosophy and psychology, and often by university presses. And it's and there too, it's often books where you do want to actually like handle the book and. Kind of flip mm-hmm. the pages inside, you know, because they tend to be kind of technical stuff. And there too, you just never know. I mean, you know, I mean, one of the things about being a college professor is that, you know, you meet a lot of people who write about really esoteric things, mm-hmm. right? And things that, you know, things you didn't even know you were interested in until you found the book. So again, it's, you know, things that you would be hard to stumble on if you're just at Amazon. As I said, Amazon is great if you're looking for a specific book or if you're just looking for like new, very popular, you know, fiction. If you want to know, if you want to do a Stephen King novel, right? You know, that's the place to go. But these obscure scholarly books where you don't even know what to search for, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to, you see the book and something, the cover catches your eye and you read the flap and say, oh, you know, I bought a book on sumo wrestling recently. You know, at one of these bookstores.
Okay. Like,
you know, it just looked cool. You know, there's a little paperback book called Sumo. It's the history of sumo wrestling. And I mean, you've seen sumo wrestling, right? Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous, right? I mean, you know, and yet, you know, it's kind of a big deal in Japan. I haven't read it yet, but it's been sitting on my shelf. I treat books like fine wine.
Yeah.
Right? They have to age for a while before I actually read them. But yeah, but that's the kind of thing. So I tend to be kind of an impulse buyer, you know, on books. And frankly, like in math conferences, right? If you go to like the joint mathematics meetings and you go to the exhibitions. Have you been to the joint meetings or
math fest? No. This will be the first one.
Okay. A math fest?
No, I haven't.
Oh, okay. Well, one thing you're going to discover.
Okay.
Is that they always have an exhibition center.
Yeah.
Okay. Where all the major publishers of math books have their wares set up. And I rarely get out of there without spending at least like $200. You know, I'm totally going to read this. And usually, I never read them. But, but the thing is, like, you know, if I had infinite time, I would read them. But anyway, Labyrinth Books, as I said, it's in Princeton, Jersey. My parents live near there. So when I go visit my parents, I always make a stop at Labyrinth Books. And I like looking at the new scholarly books. Because, again, you know, in one sense, bookstores are getting obsolete. But, you know, but what's obsolete are, like, Barnes & Noble-type bookstores.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just the bookstores that traffic in, you know, commercially, you know, big-time, famous authors, you know, what you might call kind of straight fiction kind of books. Like you know, nowadays ebooks are a big thing. Most of the fiction I read are ebooks now. I still like paper books,
mm-hmm.
But ebooks are cheaper, and when you're done with them, they don't take up space.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, most of my book buying is now ebooks. But there are some things that just don't work well as ebooks. Math books, they just aren't good.
No, I completely agree.
Yeah, they're just and plus with math books especially, you really want to flip back and forth. Mm-hmm. A lot, and it's just harder to do that.
It's annoying.
You know, with ebooks. Yeah. So, I mean, so print books still have their advantages.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, chess books are like that, too.
Yep.
They're not so pleasant to read.
I'll wait till after this.
Okay.
I have a story about chess.
Oh, okay. But anyway, so yeah, those are three bookstores. But still, it's still major fun for me. Anytime I visit a new city, right, I like to know, are there any kind of, you know, because you these days you usually have to go to big cities.
Mm-hmm.
But if there are any good used bookstores around, I always like to spend some time browsing. You never know what you're going to find there. You know, if you go to my house, I'm just drowning in books. I mean, I have bookshelves all over the place, and I still have just books in boxes mm-hmm. because I just don't have shelf space for them. But I think, just sort of, you know, wrapping this up, you know, I think something is lost. You know, book culture, you know, is a thing. And you know, there's just an aesthetic satisfaction to, you know, to books, and I think, you know, some people, and a lot of what I was saying at the beginning, right? Some people are readers, and some people just aren't. And you know, I'm definitely a reader. I'm someone who, you know, I always have more than, I usually have two or three books going at mm-hmm. one time. When I go to the bathroom, okay, it's a major decision for me to make sure I have the right bathroom reading. Okay.
Okay.
Because you're sitting there, right? You know. That's a lot of downtime, right? Depending on what you had for dinner, right? Don't mean to be gross here, right? Put this online. And, so you got to pick the right book or magazine, right? Mm-hmm. When I travel, right? You know, I bring my tablet with me so I can read, but I always make sure I have a print book with me too, just in case somehow the tablet gets damaged and suddenly I can't read it. You know, you don't want to be caught without a book, you know, when you're traveling. So I always have, you know, yeah, probably the tablet's going to be fine, but you never know, you know, when you're going to, you know, drop a suitcase on it or something, and, you know, you want to have that, the print book doesn't get damaged.
Just
you know?
In case.
Yeah. And yeah, so, I mean, that's just, so there you go. I'll stop there.
Okay. Awesome.
I could continue.
Did you know it was exactly like 20 minutes almost?
I'm that good.
Oh, wow. Perfect.
Yeah. I